Hi guys, it's me, Lindsay. I'm in Baltimore today for a speaking engagement and the most amazing thing happened. Two of the incredible women currently enrolled in my online community and group mentorship, Marketing Made Simple for Small Business, came to hear me speak. Not only did they come to meet me and support me, but they came to meet each other. And it made me realize something, that Marketing Made Simple is so much more than a mentorship and a community. These women are building such amazing relationships and they are supporting one another in such big ways. And I am really, really lucky to be a part of it. I had a lot of people tonight ask me, how can I work with you? And so here's how. Marketing Made Simple for Small Business is a group mentorship and online community for small women-owned businesses. You'll work to create effective content, messaging, and marketing processes to connect with your community, build awareness, and drive sales. This is a program that combines small group strategy sessions, one-on-one Q&A, and accelerator calls, community support, and a ton of digital resources designed to give you the step-by-step instructions and guidance that you need for brand growth. We just opened the doors to our spring cohort of Marketing Made Simple for Small Business, and you can still get in before the end of the month. Use the code FOUNDHER for 20% off. Plus, you're going to want to act fast because I've added an amazing bonus. When you join as an annual member, you get a second one-on-one accelerator call with me. If you've already enrolled in the spring cohort, you will get this too. Any questions, simply DM or email me. Click the link in the show notes for more information. And now, onto the show. Today's story is truly remarkable. I am in complete awe of Gretchen Witt's strength and determination after a life-altering event changed the course of her family's future forever. Gretchen Witt spent over 2 decades in PR, helping clients of all sizes, and then her 2.5-year-old son, Liam, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer after a well visit to his pediatrician. His diagnosis was as unexpected for Gretchen as it was for her to find out that cancer is the #1 disease killer of kids in the United States. She quickly adapted as she focused on saving her son's life and realized that the lack of awareness around the needs of pediatric cancer were a communication challenge. No one likes to talk about cancer, let alone kids who get cancer. When her son was in a period of being cancer-free, she decided to give back by organizing a larger-than-life cookie bake-a-thon as a fundraiser for a new treatment in development. She leaned on her PR background and came up with the idea to bake 96,000 cookies as a way to get attention for the sheer audacity, but also to raise as much dough as possible. That fundraiser brought in more than $420,000, but equally as important, made her realize she had come up with a way to open the door to talk about a really difficult topic, kids who get cancer. After a 4-year battle, her son Liam unfortunately lost his fight with cancer. But 7 months after, the first treatment that they helped to fund with the 96,000 cookie bake-a-thon became available, which today has already helped thousands of kids. Cookies for Kids Cancer was born and has granted more than $21 million, which has helped to make 2+ dozen new treatments available for kids. Please come on in and meet my incredibly amazing and strong and talented guest, Gretchen Witt. Dear Founder, I'm your host, Lindsay Pinchuk. At 30 years old, I founded my first company with just $500, building it to reach 3 million people and generate 7 figures in revenue for 6 years straight, all before I sold it. A decade later, I exited with one goal, to support other women in business through their own entrepreneurship journeys. As an entrepreneur, you wear every hat. You burn the midnight oil, and most of all, you pour your heart and soul into everything you do. But there's no blueprint for success. Every week on Dear Founder, you'll get to sit in as I pick the brain of some of my closest female founder contacts. Save yourself time, money, and hassle listening to the lessons of those who have already done it. You'll also have the chance to hear about my own founder journey, how I built my first company, and now how I'm building my second, as I share solo episodes filled with actionable lessons and steps that you can apply to your business immediately. Make sure to subscribe now so that we can build our businesses together each and every week. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Founder. I am really looking forward to introducing today's guest to you. She has taken a personal circumstance and built an entire incredible foundation, nonprofit around something that happened to her. And you heard me a little bit in the intro, but I'm going to let her share her story.
because there's no way that I could do it the justice that it deserves. So Gretchen Witt, who is the co-founder and executive director of Cookies for Kids Cancer, welcome to Dear Founder. Thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Oh gosh, absolutely. It's always an honor, and you know, awareness is the first step to change. So I appreciate you being interested enough in the story to want to hear more.
So tell us your story. Let's start there.
Well, I was a mom of, I am a mom, was a mom of two children. I was I came to the whole motherhood thing a little bit later in life. So I had to have my children quickly before any biological clocks kept ticking. So my children were 20 months apart, and Liam was my baby boy who was born first, and Ella was his baby sister who completely adored him. So on a day when Liam was about 2.5 and his sister was 13 months old, he went to preschool. I then took him to the pediatrician for a wellness visit because I just felt like something was off, but I couldn't put my finger on any one thing that was wrong. But it was enough that I really just wanted to get that nagging feeling to go away. So I took him to the pediatrician for a well visit. At the end of the visit, the pediatrician gave me 3 prescriptions. One was for a chest x-ray, one was for an abdominal ultrasound, and the third one was for a CBC to check his blood counts. And I took the prescriptions, and I was grateful that he was taking it seriously enough that he was listening to me, that I was worried. And I looked at him and I said, well, okay, so how soon should I have these done? And he said, soon, but you know, like within the next couple of weeks kind of thing. And I was like, okay. And I took Liam, put him in his car seat, and drove to the closest hospital and went to the outpatient area and walked in and said, I really need to get these tests done as soon as possible. And the woman who was working at the desk took the prescriptions, looked at me, looked down at them, and said, you know what? You get one of these done, but the other two are just not going to happen. They're going to take weeks to schedule. And as she said that to me, our eyes locked, and she grabbed my hand and she said, you know what? We're going to figure it out. We'll get these taken care of today. So by the end of that night, it was already late in the afternoon, by, I don't know, like maybe 9 or 10 o'clock that night, we had done all the tests. I was asked to go to a room. The room was actually the room where x-rays and other scans are read. So it was just this room that was lined with monitors, and all the monitors were kind of glowing, but there was nobody there because it was after hours. And somebody handed me a red phone, which I just thought was so odd, because I felt like, you know, like there's the phones that are red are always like the emergency phones. And on the other end of the line was my son's pediatrician saying, Gretchen, we found a large abdominal tumor in Liam. We don't know what it is. We're going to admit you tonight and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And so that's what started the odyssey. And really who I am and where I am today were those words. The next day, we did more tests. There was a pediatric oncologist who said to me, it could be this or it could be that. And you really want to hope that it's not this, because if it's this, that's really bad. And then my son went through the scan and he was under anesthesia. So I was just kind of standing there nervously waiting the results. And the the oncologist came in and she said, well, it's the really bad one.
And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Like that for bedside manner, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it gets even better too. Mm-hmm. So we had a diagnosis and then what was interesting is that immediately my husband and I went into this triage mode where my job was to take care of our son. His job was to gather a group of people together who would research my son's kind of cancer and figure out who had the most experience with that kind of cancer and where we should go and what, like, where do you go once you get this diagnosis? So as my son was recovering from anesthesia, I was on the phone with my husband and the oncologist came over to me and they wanted to immediately do a biopsy. And I looked at her and I said, well, actually, we're probably going to move to a different hospital. And she looked at me and she said, well, then there's nothing left to talk about, and turned around and walked away.
Oh, my God.
So he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. He was 2.5. My son had never so much as had an ear infection or any of those diseases and sicknesses that little kids get all the time. So this was completely out of left field. And that's the thing about pediatric cancer that I learned very early on, is that it's often called the silent killer, because by the time it's diagnosed, so much has happened that it's difficult to treat.
So let's move forward into, you had this diagnosis, and when did Cookies for Kids Cancer come about? What was, and how did, I'll get into that, but let's talk about when this came about.
So we had the diagnosis, we started going through treatment, and immediately, as somebody who has spent my career in communications, I was completely dumbfounded that I had no idea that kids even get cancer. I just didn't know that was a thing. I thought it had already been taken care of. I did not know that pediatric cancer is the number one disease killer of kids in the U.S. I didn't know that it kills more kids than asthma, AIDS, MS, and MD combined. I didn't know that the kinds of cancers kids get are totally different than the kinds of cancers adults get. And what I really didn't know is how little funding is directed towards kids' cancers. So the marketer communications mind started going into overdrive, because I realized very early on that this was a communications challenge. This is like one of those things that nobody wants to think about. Nobody wants to think about cancer. They really don't want to think about kids getting cancer. And so to me, I was like, all right, hold on a minute here. But if we don't talk about it, it's not going to get better. So I made this deal that as soon as Liam was okay, because I was sure he was going to be okay, then I would do whatever it was that I could to try and help. So fast forward, we get to a point where he is declared to be NED. His kind of cancer in particular is one that never goes into remission. There's either no evidence of disease, NED, or there's evidence of disease. So he achieves this milestone of being NED. And I was so grateful that I was like, all right, I have to do something. This is my moment. I have to do something. There's so many kids who don't even get to that point of being NED. And I just needed to get involved, and I needed to try to raise some awareness and also to raise some funds for research. So I was sitting on the steps of my son's preschool. I just dropped him off. Like, I literally, at the time, I was so grateful to do things as normal as take my son to preschool. I was just incredibly grateful. And I did not want to miss a second of being with him. So I'm sitting on the steps of his preschool and I'm thinking, well, I don't have time to train for a marathon. I'm not going to run up Mount Everest or any one of those things. Like, that would take me away from my children. I'm not going to do a car wash. At the time, we were living in New York City, which, you know, New York City and car washes don't exactly mix that well. And I had just read a story in Oprah magazine saying, do what you know and do what you love. I love to bake cookies. My son loved to help me in the kitchen. The holidays were coming up. It was actually October. And, you know, the holidays are that time of year where people are scrambling to not only find a gift that has meaning and you feel good about giving your money towards, but you know that the recipient will appreciate it and also feel good about receiving. So I was like, all right, we're going to bake some cookies. We're going to have a massive cookie bake-a-thon. And the money that people give for the cookies are going to go to research. And so the recipients are going to love it because this is something that has meaning and purpose and is delicious. And, you know, the person who's giving it is going to feel good because they know that their money is going towards a cause and they can feel good about that as well. So then the next question was, well, how many cookies? And at the time, I knew about 80 families whose children were going through cancer treatment. And I had also read that the average Girl Scout sells about 100 boxes of cookies. So I was doing math, like 80 times 100 is 8,000. So 8,000 dozen is 96,000 cookies. Okay, that seems like a reasonable number. So that's where the idea came up with. But the other thing to mention is that the reason why I kind of settled in on cookies is it wasn't so much about the cookie. It was about the concept of a good cookie and being a good cookie. Because being a good cookie and saying to somebody, are you a good cookie or are you interested in talking about good cookies, is the exact antithesis of saying, hey, I want to call you tomorrow at 2 and talk to you about kids who get cancer. You're going to get the, oh, you know what? I'm shampooing the cat tomorrow at 2. I'm so sorry. I'm not available. But if I called you and said, hey, can we talk about good cookies? Then all of a sudden it opens up the door to a conversation that you need to be able to have with people.
So what happens when you baked the 96,000 cookies?
Well, as true to life, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. It was actually really difficult.
Who baked the cookies? I mean, really?
Well, so a girlfriend of mine and I, and her children were, she had twins who were also in my son's preschool class. She joined me on this crazy odyssey. And she was
the goal was a bake-a-thon, right? Like the goal was a bake-a-thon. So.
Yeah, the goal was a bake-a-thon. And we literally just started putting one foot in front of the other. It was like one task at a time. Like, okay, how do we figure out what recipes, you know, what's the packaging going to be like? How are we going to ship the cookies? How are we going to sell the cookies? Oh, we have to create a website really quickly. Okay. Let's create a website really quickly. It was just like, we just kind of broke it down into the little buckets and took it one step at a time. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, oh my gosh, like I'd never be able to do that. One of the earliest lessons that I received after Liam was diagnosed is that you can't look too far ahead. You have to stay in the immediate. And, you know, I think we naturally, especially as we get older, we try to plan ahead. Yeah, like we try to look ahead towards the future. And in the world of pediatric cancer, at least, you can't really do that because you're lucky at some stages of cancer treatment to make it through the next 5 minutes. So, you know, so I realized that you just need to take it like a small step at a time and figure things out and just keep figuring things out one step at a time, as opposed to feeling overwhelmed by the whole thing. So taking off small bits and chewing through it and figuring out what the solution is was really important at that point in time.
And so this initial effort, what was the result of it?
So we raised over $420,000. We should have raised a little over $200,000. The reason why it was that much is because most people said to us, keep the cookies. We just want to make a donation. We heard what you're doing and we want to get involved. That then led to the development of Cookies for Kids Cancer as a year-round organization. It launched in September, which is Pediatric Cancer, I call it Unawareness Month, but Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month. Since then, we have gone on to donate more or grant more than $21 million. There's been over 130 grants that we have given to all kinds of pediatric cancers. There have been more than 16,000 grassroots events held in all 50 states and 26 countries. We have a charity navigator rating of 96 or 97. 100 is the top rating. So you know, like, we're almost there. And it never ceases to amaze me, the people who get involved.
Last week on Dear Founder, you heard me talk all about the importance of repurposing your content. It's imperative as a small business owner that you squeeze every little bit of juice out of every single piece of content that you create. Why? Because you're not necessarily a content creator. You're a small business owner and you want to focus on your business and your bottom line, not being on the content creation wheel. So you can go to the link in the show notes and grab my guide, 30 Pieces of Content in 2 Hours. This guide will show you how to take one piece of content and make 30 different pieces out of it very quickly. It is so important that you have a process in place so that you can put out content that connects on a regular basis. I can't wait to see what it is that you produce.
Unfortunately, your son lost his battle with cancer, and I'm so sorry about that. And I know I told you that when we first got on here. And I think my biggest question about that, and I'm sure so many of our listeners, it's how do you continue to put one foot in front of another every single day after you go through something like that?
It's interesting because I don't think that I would have had the energy to start the organization if I had started it after he passed away. I don't know if I would have had the strength. I just don't know. But the reason why I stay involved, and it's interesting you should say that, because invariably every once in a while I'll have somebody who will say something to me to the effect of, why do you stay involved? You lost, your son died. Like, why do you stay involved? And it's because he died that I feel like I need to stay involved. And for me, the reason is because I know my son inside and out. And I know that his expectation of us who were left behind is that if there was something we could do to make it better for somebody else, that we should do it, no matter what it is. Like, we should just do it. Like, why wouldn't you? And I feel like I'm going to see him again. And I feel like you're not allowed to lie when you're in heaven. Like, something really bad happens if you lie in heaven. I feel like it's a lie detector test immediately. But at the end of the day, I really feel like I can't imagine what else I would be doing other than using his passing to help others. Because I don't want anybody else to ever feel this pain.
And I mean, that is so commendable. And I think that, you know, a lot of the people who listen to our podcast are founders, business owners, et cetera. But as I shared with you when we got on to the recording earlier, you know, there are so many people out there who build foundations and businesses and what it is that they do in their day to day off of personal experience and personal missions. And oftentimes, most times, those businesses and foundations are that much stronger and better because of the authenticity of the person who's behind it and the fact that there is a mission driving them to do what it is that they do every day. And so I would love for you to talk for a minute about being so mission driven, because I think every business owner should have a mission. You know, I mean, if you're doing something day in and day out, because you believe in something and you believe in what you're doing. Yes, this is a nonprofit. And yes, there is a very, very directed mission behind it. But everyone should have a mission.
Well, everybody should know. I mean, like, anybody can smell authenticity. You know, so that is one thing right off the bat. Like, you have to be doing something for the right reason and the right purpose. And it has to be something that you believe in, because starting an organization, whether it's a for-profit or a non-for-profit business, is not for the faint of heart. It's hard work. It is really hard work. And so you better believe in what it is that you are doing without a shadow of a doubt, because there's no way, like it's not easy. It's not easy. So you have to have an idea of what it is that you're doing, why you're doing it, and why it's important and why it's needed.
You talk a lot about impacting change. And I love that you talk about that, because it's not just change for families who are going through what you're going through. I mean, it's change as change, and everyone wants to make the world a better place, right? So what do you think is the biggest catalyst for impacting change?
I think that part of the biggest catalyst is connecting with people. And that again comes back to authenticity. And really being buttoned up about what you're about and what you're doing. Like, you have to stay true to the mission. That has to be so ingrained that it's like having tunnel vision. There's no way that somebody is going to get you off the track. Like, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And, you know, because there's a lot of things that can come in, like, oh, we could go do this over here, and we could do that over here. And that's probably one of the, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it time and time and time again. People get lost and they start looking at other shiny things that are out there. And you have to stay focused on what your purpose is. And if it's something that might seem like a great idea, but it's not really coming back to the purpose, then you don't want to do it.
Like, talk about that a little bit more, and about the focus, because you're right. People do get steered in a million directions when the next best thing comes along. So how do you maintain your focus on this one mission that you have set forth?
Like, we are about, our mission statement is that we are here to fund research into new, improved, and less toxic pediatric cancer treatments. So new and improved and less toxic. I'm very clear on what that mission is. We receive lots of, hey, can you, I mean, like, we get all kinds of requests for paying for travel for families, to funding different types of things that aren't necessarily directly related to new therapies for kids, there's just a myriad of things that come our way. And like any business out there, like if you're a consumer products company and you make a certain type of product, then you need to continue making that certain type of product and not, you know, like go off in a direction and a tangent that is going to create confusion for your consumers and also take your eye off the ball of what it is that you're doing. So I would say that being clear as a leader, but then also making sure that everybody who is part of the organization is clear on what it is that you're doing is incredibly important. That's probably the most important thing.
So it's been 16 years since this, I mean, 2008, right?
Well, it's 2008. Yeah. Liam died in 2011.
Okay.
But the organization was going, like, doing its thing, but yeah, it has been.
So it's been 16 years since the organization started, since that first bake-a-thon. And obviously a lot has happened. You rattled off a lot of amazing numbers and accolades at the top of this conversation. How do you go from like this giant, like one-off bake-a-thon to a foundation that is a year-round effort? And, you know, and kind of what were those concrete steps that you took to put that into place? You have a huge team. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, five. We only have five employees.
But it doesn't matter. You have like so many nonprofits and foundations that I talk to, it's one person. To have five people on your team is really big for a nonprofit.
Yeah. So I should clarify by saying that I was running the PR department at a large company. And so I was working on foundation work as my second job. And then in 20, I can't remember if it was 2017 or 2018, I decided to focus all of my attention on the nonprofit. My husband and I worked at the same company, and he was taking on a new role that one of us was going to have to leave. And so we chose my departure versus his, since he was becoming president of the company. So
okay.
it seemed like maybe he should stay on. I still actually am very upset with him because I loved my job more than anything. But there was a team that was running the organization while I was doing my thing in the for-profit world. Since coming on 100% of the time, it's been fascinating to me because there's so many lessons that come from the for-profit world that apply to the non-for-profit world. And for some reason, I think that people don't really realize that. And they think that nonprofits are incredibly different. And I think that there's a lot of nonprofits that don't understand necessarily what it is that the for-profit business is looking for from them. And this is a partnership, and you're not always looking for a handout, but you're looking for a way to bridge the gap so that you can help your corporate supporters fulfill what it is that they are trying to do by working with you, as well as staying true to your mission. Okay, so your question was, how have we done that? Staying very mission focused and clear on what it is that we do is incredibly important. Giving people an opportunity to get involved anywhere, at any time, regardless of your age and regardless of how many zeros are in your bank account, I think is really important. So for me, the aspect of the grassroots angle of our organization, which is that anybody can get involved anywhere at any age. And it really doesn't matter what you do. It's just, if you are moved enough to get involved and to be a good cookie by having some kind of fundraiser, I don't care if you have a bowl-a-thon, if you have a bake sale, if you have a billiards tournament, if you organize a 5K run, it doesn't matter what you do. It's just the concept of getting involved and saying, I care enough to make a difference. I want to be a good cookie too. So for me, I think that has been a really important key to our continued success, is that it's something that is very tangible that anybody can do, no matter where you are. Because there's so many, there's so many nonprofits that require you to do something, whether it's rafting or whether it's running, and you're immediately excluding certain groups of people. And pediatric cancer impacts
everyone.
People in every state, everywhere. And so I really felt that it was incredibly important to try to find something, to try and find messaging that would say, hey, I don't care where you live. I don't care what's going on in your world. You can be a part of this and you can get involved. And the dollars you raise will make a difference. I don't care if it's $10 or $100, $1,000 or $10,000. Every dollar counts.
Hi guys, it's Lindsay Pinchuk, host of Dear Founder. As entrepreneurs, you wear so many hats, don't you? Sometimes it's hard to know how and when and who to hire for help. But I want to say, finding Hivecast to produce my podcast has been a godsend. They've been producing Dear Founder since season one, and honestly, I'm not sure what I'd do without them. Each week, I give them everything that they need to create the episodes that you hear. And not only do they produce and put out the episode, but they create all the awesome marketing materials that you see to promote it. They save me so much time, and honestly, their rates don't break the bank. What I love about them is that they make podcasting accessible to any small business owner who wants to create a podcast. I know that many of you have reached out to them already, but I just want to say, if you're thinking about a podcast of your own, reach out to the Hivecast team. I promise they will make it seamless from the start. You can find them through the link in the show notes. And now back to the episode.
So I shared with you before we hit record that I think that it is very important for those of us in the for-profit world to find nonprofits to align with, and that can align with our mission. I gave you the example of my first company, Bump Club. We always gave back in both product, time, and dollars to other organizations that supported families and parents, including pediatric wellness and health and wellness organizations. But how can a for-profit align with Cookies for Kids Cancer? Like, what are some of the best ways that a for-profit can get involved?
So many ways. I mean, some of the best grassroots events that we have seen is if a company decides to have an employee bake sale, and there will be executives who are judging things from best cookie to best cakes and whatever it is that is brought. It's always, there's something cathartic about baking, and there's something that just makes people smile when there's a bake sale going on. So, okay, that's one way that is a great employee engagement opportunity. Businesses can get involved by directing a portion of proceeds from either a specific product or a specific time period. So whether it's a weekend or a month or a season, to the organization. And you know better than I do, or as well as I do, that consumers are looking for businesses that stand for something. Consumers are looking for businesses that take a stand and say that they want to make a difference. And you know that consumers can hold up product A and product B. And if product A is a little bit more expensive, but it's supporting something, product A is usually going to be the one that they pick. So there's getting involved on that level. We also offer cookies 365 days a year. And while my days of cookie baking are now in my home kitchen, we can customize cookies with a company's logo or whatever it is that they're looking for. And it's a great, not only employee motivator, but it's a great gift to send to clients and customers and new business prospects. For the exact same reason that initial 96,000 did so good. I mean, you can send a pen or you can send a box of cookies. Yeah. Why not go with the box of cookies that counts for something? And then, there's all kinds of other ways that you can get involved. Like if you have a product, you can include our logo on your packaging and tell the story. It's a great opportunity to get involved, as well as other kinds of employee engagement opportunities. Like we just recently, last week, did something with a large bank where we sent 2,500 cookies to the bank. And in a matter of a couple of hours, they packaged them up into these individual packages that were going to hospital partner centers across the country. So, and they felt great. We were grateful that they took care of this. And it's a win-win situation. And that's the thing that you pointed out, is that it's important for businesses to get involved, but it's important not just because it looks good to the outside, but it makes your employees feel good about who and what they're doing.
Well, you want to be, quote, raising good cookies within your organization too, right? And that's a big part of it. So I have two more questions for you. The first of which is, we talk a lot about legacy here, a lot. And especially with female founders, right? Like, I mean, I think just as women, many of my guests are moms, and we talk a lot about the legacy we're building. And you are not only building a legacy for yourself, but you are carrying on your son's legacy. And so I would love to hear from you what you think Liam would say about this.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, I know that his first question will be, "Mommy, did you help to make it better for others?" And I will also say that this is not an easy path. I am not a nonprofit person Like I did not grow up in the nonprofit world. I came to it from a matter of circumstances. And it's hard. It's actually really, really hard. There's all kinds of things that you're constantly having to balance and deal with and figure out. I mean, it's a lot of bootstrapping that happens in the world of nonprofits. But on the days when I'm like, oh, gosh, I don't know. I know that the challenges that I sometimes deal with pale in comparison to what a child who goes through cancer treatment deals with. And that puts me in my place really quickly and kind of makes me get a stiff upper lip and say, you know what, just suck it up and keep going on. Because having lived through my son's 4-year cancer battle, it's nothing compared to what he did. So I know that he will be expecting me to have done whatever it is that I can do to have any kind of impact, whatever it is.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. And I know it's like not always easy to share, but you also just talked about, you said it just now, and you said it in the beginning of this, that it is hard to build a nonprofit and there's a lot of bootstrapping, and those are direct parallels to like a lot of our listeners who are building businesses in the for-profit world right now. And so I'm going to ask you the same question I ask every guest here. And that is, what are three things, actionable things that you would tell a founder of anything to do when they're getting started?
Be very clear it is on what you're doing and why you're doing it. Number one. Number two, make sure that there's a need in the marketplace. You have to make sure that there is a need. And number three, I would say don't give up. I think that people instinctively get nervous about failure. And so they won't try something. If I had been nervous about whether or not I was going to be able to make 96,000 cookies, there wouldn't be more than 21 million granted and more than 24 new treatments that are available today. If I had talked myself out of it. But at the end of the day, what's going to happen? Somebody's going to get mad at you for trying something? Like, just give it a whirl. See what happens. Like, why not? Why not try something?
I love that. Gretchen Witt, co-founder and executive director of Cookies for Kids Cancer, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story and for allowing us to share your story with the world. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to get involved and be a good cookie, you know where to find me.
All the information will be in our show notes.
Wonderful.
In case you missed it, we close out each episode with our number one takeaway from our conversation. My takeaway today is to be very clear about what you're doing and why. Not only when you have a mission-driven entity. You can't be everything to everyone, so you want to get clarity about the exact problem that you want to solve, who you want to solve it for, and why. Because when you do this, it helps you to communicate your message clearly, definitively, and ultimately find more success in whatever it is that you're doing. I want to thank Gretchen so much for joining us today. We have been getting so much love for season 3, and you all have been so gracious with your time, leaving us some amazing reviews. If you liked today's conversation, I would love it if you left a 5-star rating and a review so that others can find this conversation. And dear founder, all you have to do is go to ratethispodcast.com/dearfounder or click the link in the show notes to leave a review wherever it is that you podcast. And if you know someone who we should meet, send them our Meet a Founder link in our show notes. We'll introduce them to our community on our social media and our website later this year. But for now, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you on Thursday.